Ladies and gentlemen, may I direct your attention to something quite extraordinary, quite incredible, quite unlike anything you may have experienced in your life.
Thank you very much for being here. And today we have the episode 18. So this is episode 18, and today we are going to be talking about something very, very interesting. I have two of my friends here. The first one is Diego. Hello, Diego. How's it going?
Hello, everybody. Good. Enjoying Italian food for like every day. Okay.
Like every day.
Yeah. Diego is now living. Sorry?
What a tragedy.
What a tragedy.
I will say the opposite.
So I just wanted to introduce you, Diego, to the people here. So, you know, we have many listeners in various countries, and it is very good. It is going to be very nice for you to tell us a little bit about yourself, a little bit about what you've been doing, for example.
Okay, it's a little bit strange because my background is actually in engineering and in naval architecture. So I'm a little bit expanding my fields, really like that. But I'm also an avid reader and a really big fan of the study of philosophy and other sciences. So I'm here to discuss a little bit of the ideas outside of my career. Okay. I am currently living in Italy. And okay. I think that's everything for now.
Okay, excellent. Thank you very much. And we have Rudy here. You know him, people, already from previous episodes and everything. So hi, Rudy. How's it going? You can tell us a little bit about what you've been doing lately.
Hi there. I'm pretty much passionate about knowledge. I mean, there is a phrase that says that knowledge is power, but that's not anymore the case. Clarity, who has clarity of the knowledge has the power, because we can find knowledge everywhere, Wikipedia, whatever. But if we don't have clarity of the things we read and see, then we can be misled by a lot of incorrect knowledge. So I'm a passionate for knowledge. I'm a student of politics, philosophy, in economics, and I love to discuss different issues with friends like this moment, right?
Excellent. That is pretty good to know, because that's what we have been doing. So this is a very good space to actually share ideas. And today we are going to be talking about this very specific topic in specific, and that is happiness. So today we are going to be talking about happiness in the perspective of some of the most common sites, so to say. So it is going to be from philosophy, economy, politics, and a little bit about psychology, because we are not like super versed in psychology. So we are going to introduce some ideas and to make you guys think about these ideas, because this is the most important thing. I have... maybe I am sounding a little bit redundant, but I have said it many times that the objective of this is to make you guys think, right? To the listeners to this of this podcast, is that the objective? So let's begin with the discussion, guys. So if you please, we can actually talk about the happiness from the perspective of economy. So what do you think about the money and happiness?
Well, there is a lot of it to develop. I think there is a couple of statistics. I could not find the sources, otherwise I would have presented them. But there is a fixed amount of money that is the limit of happiness, put it like that. Mm-hmm. Where if you have less than that, it's hard to achieve this like a self-reported feeling of happiness. And if you have more than that, it does not make a difference. I remember that in the article that I read, it was a long time ago I read it, they mentioned that it was more or less the required amount of money to live comfortably in a third world country. That definition is a little bit vague, but whatever. And to like enough to own a premium car, to put it like that, not a car that is only serves your basic necessities for mobility if you live in a car dependent city, but like a car that you can decide that, okay, I want a nice car for me. If you get that level, more or less, the extra amount of money that you were earning did not increase your happiness index. So it's kind of curious. And there is another thing that is kind of curious to mention, because there was a couple of studies after the collapse of the Soviet Union about if people were happier before or after the collapse. Mm-hmm. And yeah, the Soviet Union was a failed experiment. It didn't even like got to move towards socialism from the state communism that it was in the end and everything. But people felt more happy under it than under the system that came after the Soviet Union. And it's kind of curious, and I think it has a lot to do in the economic part with the fact that feeling safe with the material conditions that you have to be like that, feeling safe with the fact that you will have a roof over your head, clothes to wear if necessary, or food to feed yourself. I think that's one of the big factors that may incurse in the level of happiness that you have.
Okay, excellent. Well, thank you very much for sharing that with us. And what do you think about this, Rudy? I mean, what have you read? What is your thoughts?
So let's remember that economy is a really young science. It was not considered a science probably 100 years ago. So what economic does is basically search where are we going to get our everything we need and the resources we have. So exactly like our friend were saying, based on your environment, like the level of happiness, the index of happiness will change, because someone living in a developed country like the United States, who is considered poor but still have a car and an iPhone and an apartment, it will not be, we cannot measure the happiness on its economy from a person living on a very poor country where the main need, basic human need, is to get food every day. It's going to depend a lot on the environment and the economics of your own country. Mm-hmm. But exactly something subjective, like what do you consider economy and things that you value? For example, if you consider having the cut of the year being something that will make you happy, opposite people consider having just the enough money to live every day on a specific part of the world, that's going to make them happy. So it's going to, the economy is so different, and we need definitely to learn more about economical principles on how to develop, but it's gonna depend and vary based on the country that we live. I think
it is very specific what you said here. I mean, like what you guys said here basically, and it is the happiness set point. This is actually defined by one of the authors I read recently. His name is Jonathan Haidt, and he has written a book called The Happiness Hypothesis. So he actually states on his book that we all have like a happiness set point, and whenever we want to measure how happy we are, we'll have to go back to the things that we already own and where do we live. I mean, you Rudy, you were talking about this environment or so-called like place where we live at the moment. So if you are living in a place where the economy is developing or still is like stagnated, so to say, as well, like in Guatemala, your happiness set point would be lower, and you know, you will be happier with less things that people, I don't know, that live in a developed country like USA or Europe, for example, they will need a little bit more to be happy. So what have you seen or you can tell us about this, Diego?
Well, I would like to first the idea of developed country. That's a little bit hard to define. Mm-hmm. I would not consider, for example, the U.S. a developed country, as they don't have like a developed infrastructure. They are still car dependent, or they don't have like a developed like public health net and stuff like that. But that goes to my next point. And for that, I would like to refer to the happiness, work happiness report that is that we have already read, three of us. And if you see the top 8 of those countries, Finland, Denmark, Iceland, Switzerland, Netherlands, and Luxembourg, all of them are social democracies. And what does a social democracy has like as a basic factor is that as an economic system, it it guarantees the basic needs of the citizens. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a big factor in how can you really like give a population happiness in this part. And it is the idea of taking away the stress of basic survival. And I think that's one of the big factors that may influence in the level of happiness that you have. If you are under risk that a little incident may take away your livelihood, it's a little bit harder to be happy, I would say. And I think that's one of the big influential factors about that. If we talk about economy, because after all, economy is the study of the material needs, the material conditions that we have, the management of resources. So this would include an idea of how do we guarantee that everybody has the basic resources that they need for that. And after that, I think it has a lot to do with the idea of purchasing power, to put it like that. Because that's the thing, for example, let's say less developed country as Guatemala, for example, with less money, you can afford to contract people to do more work, to put it like that. Meanwhile, in another country, it may be more expensive. And as a lot of the things that give you happiness is just the fact that you can relax from a lot of your own work. This may make happiness more expensive in a more expensive country, to put it like that. But it's curious that still, with that consideration, these top 8 countries are very expensive countries. Like the cost of living in Finland and Norway, it's quite expensive.
Absolutely, yeah. And the taxes you have to pay, in fact.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But it's, with the taxes, it's a little bit curious because if you think about it like that, this level of taxes is actually a little bit less than what you would expect for the same level of services in a less developed country. There was a comparison with the US that things like car dependency and the lack of public healthcare makes so that that the general public ends up spending more than what you would get with the high taxes in Denmark, for example. That's one of the most expensive places to pay taxes in, to put it like that. So it's also like a balances on what do you get for your services? What do you get for your taxes? What do you get for your money if you are paying it either in taxes or in services? And but I think it's this safety network what plays like a big factor on it.
Okay, totally understand it. And Rudy, what do you think about this? I mean, like in the political sphere, in the political view, what do you think about the happiness? What are people searching for? What are people pursuing, in fact?
Well, remember that at least the philosophical point of view that I represent, happiness in a political environment means, just like you said, the search of freedom, because freedom means not to do whatever you want, but to have nobody to obstruct whatever action you want to take. So when we talk about a political environment, we necessarily are talking about society and how we're gonna interact with other people and with the state and the government, right? It's inevitable to consider a society without taking in consideration the government. So in that sense, what I think people would like to have is freedom, every individual in a society. But we need to, just like I said again, we need to consider that all the rules we have to interact each other, to not kill each other, to have security, to have justice, It needs to empower the government, but mainly on those two areas, justice and security, right? So as long as the government is doing the proper job, bring security to people and bring justice to wherever crime has been committed, that's going to bring them some peace and happiness. So on a political environment or subject, I mean, I determine people is looking for security to live their lives and justice, sorry, security to live free and justice to live in peace. Yeah.
I think because if we talk about freedom, I think there is a very important thing to say about it, because there are two types of freedom that exist. We have positive freedoms and we have negative freedoms. The most like widely known concept is the concept of negative freedom. Like if you are living in a state that, okay, if you declare yourself, I don't know, like if you declare yourself like an atheist, like in a Muslim country, for example, they take freedom away from you, to put it like that. That's the concept of negative freedom. It's the freedom that you have as a person without anything, like with any system on top, and there is a system that takes it away from you. But we also have the idea of positive freedom, because, for example, if are you really free to travel if you don't have the infrastructure to travel? So I think that's the other thing that this country is sharing common, because I think with the exception of Israel, most of them don't take that many like negative freedoms away from their people. But they also provide a lot of positive freedoms. Like if you want to quit your job, you are not going to die in the streets because there is no level of support, but they are going to support you. So you are free to quit your job and search for a better one, for example. So I think that's another factor to take into account in the factor of freedom. And I think freedom is actually one of the most important things for happiness. But that's, I think I'm going to develop that a little bit more when we pass to another part, more than the political. And it's a little bit more philosophical. But I think that this idea that a country has to provide you, or like the entity that you're under has to provide you also a positive freedom, is quite important. And I would like to talk about that also in the fact that we're living in mainly capitalist countries. Maybe social democracy is a little bit more socialist leaning than the majority of capitalist systems. We are still living under capitalism. And so as that, we are subject to wage labor. And that introduces another entity that plays a lot of a big role in our lives. That's the company that we are working for in the majority of cases, or the people that are like giving us the material resources for that. And there is also a big difference between how some companies work and others. Like I can see some of my contacts like working for Wärtsilä, and it's like a company that gives you a lot of freedom, both positive and negative. It gives you a support to work in the projects in the way that you would like to experiment in the things that you like and the like. But at the same time, I have some experience in working in some companies where it's the opposite. The company is totally structured in a hierarchical way, and you have no freedom even to decide how you look. If you want to get tattoos or like long hair or other things that are actually normal, but the company does not like it, giving you not only taking away positive freedoms, but also giving you negative freedoms, where like also establishing taking away negative freedoms and positive negative. I was thinking mathematically. So I think that's another thing to consider. And that's still political to a degree, because the level of control that the company has over you has a lot to do with the type of political system that you're in. It's not the same to be under a socialist democracy where you can quit your job and you still have some type of support when you find another one, or when you start to develop your own business and stuff like that. Other systems like neoliberalism or neo-feudalism that, while still capitalistic, don't offer you any way to like grab your freedom from the company you're working in.
It is very important to talk about all of these, you know, points of view, all of these thoughts and ideas about, you know, like how is happiness seen from the political view. There is something that is very interesting as well, and I want to move forward a little bit from this recent topic that we were talking about, and is like the voluntary activities. I mean, we were talking about working, we were talking about acquiring assets, for example, and how many material things do we need to be happy? And this is something that has to do as well with the principle of progress. I mean, like, basically, whenever we make progress through a inconvenience or through the obstacles that we encounter in life, we feel happy momentarily. I mean, like, this can be momentarily, because there is a principle that says, and this is actually written by this psychologist Haidt, that we can be happy for 2 weeks, about 2 weeks, and after that period of time we will not feel happy anymore, because it we will already be in the state of being conscious that it is going to be lasting. I mean, like, the satisfaction of doing this, it's lasting, or we already have what we wanted to acquire already, and the situation is already done. So after a period of time, you don't feel happy anymore. I mean, like, you have perhaps satisfaction, you're happy with that, but little by little it diminishes. And the feeling goes away. So let's talk about the feeling of happiness. I mean, like, when do you feel happy truly? I mean, is it a state? Is it a feeling? What do you think, guys? Maybe Rudy, you can actually elaborate a little bit about this.
Sure. I think the book that the author that you're mentioning, they are in order to create this book, he used a little bit of every philosophy, even not Western philosophy, but in this case, from Hinduism. And that part that you mentioned, the Hinduism part, that states that happiness is just going to be a temporary situation, it was addressed by one of my favorite Western philosophers, with Schopenhauer. I think we all gonna agree on this, in the sense that he said that temporary is just basically covering a need that your conscience has. So if you aren't happy because you are sick, and then after you take medicine, the unhappiness that comes with the disease is gonna go away, but a new necessity is gonna come out. Like, for example, the necessity of being on a relationship or not, or on the opposite, getting out of a relationship. And when you complete that, when either you break with that person or go into a relationship, you already covered that necessity. And then the next one comes, and so on and so forth. So from Hinduism all the way to Western philosophies, and including recent studies like the one of Jonathan Haidt, they will conclude that happiness is just a temporary situation based on the necessities that our body and our conscience feel at the moment. And then when they are fulfilled, the next necessity will come, bringing a new insatisfaction that will bring a new temporary happiness, and so on and so forth. So that's what I really think.
That's a very good philosophy to think into consideration. I mean, like, this is true, and in many levels, I think that we all are looking for that momentarily, I don't know, feeling of satisfaction. Are we? I mean, like, it is like that. What do you think about this, Diego?
Well, there is this thing, because happiness, for that, we have to kind of define what we mean by happiness and how we distinguish it from satisfaction and joy, to put it like that. But I really like to keep this analysis on the temporary nature of happiness. I would like to mention, I'm paraphrasing here, but this is a concept by Slavoj Žižek. So he says that sex is happiness, and a relationship and love is suffering, to put it like that. Why? Because love is a long-lasting process, to put it like that, while sex is momentary, and it gives you this this satisfaction, this joy, this happiness, to put it like that. So I think we can work a little bit on that to think that this idea of long-lasting happiness is something that is not only not real, but it's contradictory with the idea of happiness by itself. Because I think it has to do, happiness as itself, it has its origin in satisfaction and joy, to put it like that. I think we can define it as like the bloom of this concept. And I think that that's the reason why, for example, we feel happy after a long struggle, like, okay, you had a really hard time like finishing your career, for example, and then you finish it and you feel happy about it. Or you had like a really hard time like reaching this goal, like finishing this video game, for example, or anything like that, and you feel happy about it. And I think that one of the differences that we can find from the idea of happiness from satisfaction, for example, or joy in this case, is that happiness is like joy or satisfaction without the negative parts of it. Like if we have some, like an achievement or something like that, that gives us, happiness is something that we have we do not repent about that, to put it like that. Let me elaborate a little bit more. Because if you do something that feels good, like, but at the same time, you know that there is a consequence or a price to pay for that, really like that, you can feel also bad about it. You can feel both good and bad about this thing that you did. And I think you can find that you find satisfaction or you find joy, but you don't find happiness. But if you do not feel, if you don't have these negative feelings about it, I think that's what we can consider happiness as a little definition. And as we said, it's temporary. So I think that there is also this this idea that if we are going to search for happiness, we should search it not for as a end goal that is going to be like permanent, but as a environment that will allow us to experience this happiness multiple times. I don't know if I can explain myself well enough with that, but it's like, let's not search for happiness as an end goal, but let's search for the possibility of living happiness in daily life, in our daily lives, to put it like that.
That is super difficult to achieve, in fact. I mean, like to have this long-lasting circle of pursuing happiness and every time getting that satisfaction, this momentary satisfaction that you will get from achieving something or getting something new for yourself. It's as we were discussing, I mean, we three agree that it is just momentary and it cannot be like long-lasting moment. In fact, they can be like a group of moments throughout our lives, but we are always searching for that, as Schopenhauer always says, like we are always looking for this satisfaction, for this fulfillment of the necessities we do have. But what does Schopenhauer always say as well about this point of view in philosophy is that in order to get rid of these feelings is basically to adapt ourselves into something more holistic. I mean, like to go to this holistic spectrum of life and do something totally different. I mean, like get rid of these necessities is super difficult, but that's what, for example, the monks like to do. they go to live in a very austerical way and they do not have money, for example, and stuff like that. But is it real human? Is it a feeling that humans can bear? It's actually very difficult to elaborate on that because, yeah, it's in human nature. I mean, we have all of us, we have necessities.
I would say that for me, this idea of the monastic I want nothing thing is not exactly an achievement of happiness, but a renunciation of the quest for happiness.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Like it. So, guys, I just wanted to ask you, Rudy, what do you think about the scales? I mean, like, is it really a fact that we can measure happiness? I mean, like there are different types of measurements on different types of systems that, for example, exist. We have, for example, the general happiness scale that has like five or six questions. And for example, I am going to read the first one. In general, I consider myself not a very happy person from 1 to 7, one being like not happy and 7 being very happy person, or like this universal scale that exists since 2005, 2007, I think. Do you think, Rudy, that it is real? I mean, like, we can measure happiness.
Honestly, I think happiness cannot be measured because it's going to be a very subjective situation. Like, for example, all the endorphins that a mother segregates when she just have a child, and that level of excitement to see a new life when probably she was waiting for that. You know, that happiness cannot be measured versus somebody who really got a job and he was in need to desperately get this job. And such as those two examples that can be very different. One that is gonna, a mother that's gonna know is gonna be very difficult and it's gonna be economically challenging to raise a new kid compared to somebody that instead of just wasting money or having to pretty much, spend money, is just gonna acquire money from my job. Like, instead of just putting money to a new project, whether it's a baby or whatever. So I don't think it's something objectively that we can measure the level of happiness. I mean, there can be certain factors like how's your health? What are your resources? Are you doing what you like to do to live? Or do you enjoy being with your family or just being independent by yourself? So the question and the scale of being happy is going to change because we are individuals and every individual has different way of thinking. And on my point of view, that is going to be very, very hard to measure. You know?
Well, thank you
almost
very much for
impossible,
your
comments. I would say.
All right.
May I go full engineering about that?
Cool. So, pardon?
No,
yeah?
Go for it.
No, I was just going to say that we're almost hitting the end of this episode, and it might be nice to just to mention this in the investigation that I conducted to actually bring this episode to life. I studied something. Well, there is an article that says that this scale was implemented in a study in Mexico. I mean, like this general scale of happiness. And this article actually wants to validate this study, in fact, in Mexico. And they say that it worked. But I don't know how they can actually work on something super subjective like happiness. Well, that is actually one of my last comments. Diego, do you have something else to say?
No, I just wanted to say that if we go for the full engineering approach, we have different ways of measuring things with different degrees of uncertainty, to put it like that.
Okay.
I think we can technically measure happiness to a certain degree, but I don't think we can have an absolute measuring, to put it like that. So I think it's a very broad thing to think about defining like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to mention before the episode ends a little bit of Albert Camus that I am a really big fan of absurdism in itself. And it's this idea of happiness in the struggle. I think if we don't have the negative parts or the struggle to play like that, of Sisyphus pushing the boulder up the mountain, we cannot find happiness. So he puts us the happiest man that ever existed is the rebel in an oppressed country, or like an oppressed situation, as a revelation of pure freedom and as a revelation of pure struggle and pure finding of happiness, which is a little bit contradictory with the fact that we talk about the material part in the beginning, the material economic part. But I think there is something to say about it that may have some truth in it. And it's a little bit further discussion.
Yeah, I think that maybe we can actually arrange something about the topic of freedom and, you know, like political views about freedom, because it has to do a little bit with this. And all this elaboration has to be a little bit more broad than, you know, yes. Like profound. Yeah, it has to. It has to. But thank you very much, guys, for all your comments, for all your knowledge. I think that people are going to enjoy this episode. It was like super philosophical.
Yes, that was the idea. It's a philosophical subject. Yes.
Okay.
Thanks to you, man, really.
Excellent. So, Rudy, thank you very much for being here. And thank you for sharing all the thoughts and everything.
Thanks to you.
Okay, excellent. So we are going to end the episode now. Thank you guys for listening to us and share your comments, share your vibe, philosophical vibe. Okay, see you next time.
Okay, see you next time.